Welcome to the Aftershock Central Podcast. We are all here. Ronnie's here. Travis is here. I am here. Taylor.
No.
Esposito is not here.
You said it wrong.
No, I will not sing the song anymore. Somebody stole it and claimed credit for it. The song is over.
You sound like a hipster, dude.
Dude, that's my favorite.
You said
Portlandia
it before,
skit.
It was cool.
Yeah, that was my favorite Portlandia skit. That coffee shop's so over. Bikes are so over. Despacito is so over. Episode title. We have gathered here today to talk Aftershock. We have two books to talk about. We have Clank Killers number 4 and Lost City Explorers number 5. Final issue. For now?
For now.
Maybe.
At least that's what I saw on the tweets.
Let's hope so, based on this ending. So, should we just start there? Let's start there. Lost City Explorers, number 5, written by Zach Kaplan, with art by Alvaro Saraceca. Ronnie, you don't want to say that one? No? Okay. DQNF on colors and A Larger World's Troy Pateri on letters. Shout out to production, Charles Pritchett, who did our freaking awesome logo for this podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, somebody tell me about this book. I have words.
You have words? You put words together to make a sentence.
I have words put together for a sentence, and they're recorded and come out into people's ears.
That's right. It's called The Gospel.
Well, we
according
have gathered
to Aftershock.
Here, so there you
yeah.
go.
Yeah, you didn't see it because it's an audio podcast, but while you were doing that, I had my hands up in the air and
I was
feeling the sermon.
Listen, part of church is having faith, and I have total faith that actually happened. So let's talk about Lost City Explorers number 5. Who wants to tell me about this book before I chime in with words of possible anger?
Well, you want a recap or something, or
I don't just tell me about this issue. How did you guys feel about the resolution of the story?
Tell me more.
This podcast is off the rails already. God dang it!
Okay, I'll step into that, I guess.
Yeah. Go for it.
All right. So what's her name? Hell is on the other side of the portal, and she's talking to her dad, and dad's basically just like, oh no, like, I'm where I want to be, and this thing that I found, like, is my life's purpose, and I've found purpose now. So, like, I don't care if you need me, like, I'm going to stay here.
Yeah.
So, that hurts a little bit, that, like, he's so much about, following his life's purpose, and that's at the expense of his children, who, you'd hope that they would be on the short list, I think, at least.
Oh, no. You don't live with my children.
Amen.
Got it. Ouch, dude.
Amen.
Then Homer goes through the portal, rescues Hell. That happens, pretty quickly. And then, like, they come back. Dude shoots down the cavern over the portal.
Mm-hmm.
But looks like there's another portal. And maybe, Helen's going to lead the team that goes to explore it.
Yes.
Yes. I would also like to point out, I didn't call them portals. I called them stargates.
Ooh. You get bonus points because Stargate is one of the best shows of all time. Come at me, bros. All right. So
I like the movie.
Great. You should watch the TV show. It's fantastic.
Yeah, which one?
All of them. Well, not Universe.
Universe
is all right. Yeah. But SG-1 is awesome, and Atlantis has Aquaman in it, so you got to watch it.
Like, all literally, right. It has Aquaman in it.
Yeah, literally. I think it's the first TV show he did. So, let me chime in here. So I'm going to say some angry words, but Zach, if you're listening, I want you to know that I love you and I really like this book. In fact, I'm going to get my rating out of the way. I'm going to rate this a 4 out of 5. With that said, I'm not happy with this book because the resolution to me didn't make sense, right? So she goes to find her dad. Her dad's like, don't come find me. I'm cool here. the creatures that are in Atlantis don't really want interaction with anybody else. You got to get out before they come get you. They leave, but she's going to come back anyway on another mission. So that's number one. Number two.
How do you?
Yes.
Okay. Wait, well, how do you know that she's going back on another mission?
Well, because she's going to go into the portal at Sagan or the Stargate at Sagan.
Yeah, but it might be a different Stargate though. You mean, to go explore somewhere else, not back to Atlantis.
Okay, so if that's the reading, then I'm cool with it. However, that gives me another point of contention because I want to know about Atlantis. I don't want to know about another place.
Yep.
I want to know about this place. And we didn't see anything. All we see is kind of the city up in the distance. And it seems to me like they've done some work in the back matter, right? Because at the end of the issue, you see like there's an image of Atlantis that was done by the artist of the book. So like there's an idea of what this place looks like and how it's set up and how it works, but we never see it in this book. And so because of that, I felt a little cheated on that ending. Now the fact that the book is kind of like the end question mark for now, it gives me some hope that we'll see that going forward. But then, like, I don't know how long we have to wait, right? I mean, we have solicits till January, I guess, right now. And I don't remember seeing this book solicited from now until then. So that's a long break. And I really wanted to see this place or have Hell at least get to see her dad. You see what I'm saying? So for me, the resolution wasn't, what's the word that, I don't know. You guys talk. I'll think of a word.
Travis, do you want to go before I set you full straight?
Yes. Somebody set me straight, yeah. Please.
All right. No, I just want to echo, I think, what you said, Martin, which is I definitely, you know, expected more, you know, about what this Atlantis place is, you know. So we didn't really get any of that, and we didn't get any indication, you know, what it's – residents are like and why they seem to be terrorizing, you know, these people. And I get that they did say that they just want to be left alone. But it would have been nice, I guess, to get anything along those lines. Yes. And Martin, just to kind of jump off another point you made, like you're talking about why, you know, why does Helen want to go back right now? You know, I thought it was strange, I guess, as well that she being without direction and purpose just grafts on to her father's like purpose as her own. She just like appropriates it.
Yeah.
So that seems strange. But I would also add that it seems strange on some level that the Sagan people now want to open it back up when they seem to be ready to do a lot and, you know, maybe kill people to shut it down earlier. And they still know that there are monsters involved that could come out and cause trouble. So I wonder why they changed directions as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, Ronnie, set us straight.
Okay. I'm going to work backwards here. Okay. So the ending and there's no solicits till January, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's how all other books do it, like Dark Ark and Animosity and Baby Teeth.
Yes.
Because then the trade comes out and then we get the second volume started.
Sure. I get that. But to counterpoint that, and I think I've already said this, we don't see anything that we've been discussing this entire series, right? Like we have all this build up to Atlantis.
Well, hang on.
At least just show me Atlantis. That's all I want. Just show it to me. I want to see it.
So, of course, it's going to keep continuing because number sign, duh, this book already got
sign?
I did.
How old are you?
So, this book already got options for a TV series. So,
right.
Okay. So, then going back to your first point, your biggest hang up, I guess, is Atlantis, right? And we don't see it. We just hear about it and we just see the tip of it.
Just the tip.
Yeah. But in this aspect for me, it works because less is more. You hear about it. Nobody actually in the real world knows anything about it except for crazy theories.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, which you and I were talking about before we started recording.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the picture that we saw of it is, I'm sure, theories of what it looked like or whatever. So then, like, it's like the scary movie where you actually don't get to see the monster type thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's more satisfying because you don't see it. It's just, you know, it's there and you're knocking on the door or you're just through the threshold of the door. And, okay, I came here to find you and bring you back. You're content and happy with it. That's fine. My purpose in life now is to actually explore because that's, I'm going to scratch that itch, which we find out at the end. And with him saying there's a new discovery, and new discovery is in capital and boldface,
mm-hmm.
that led me to believe that the new quote-unquote Stargate that they found wasn't to Atlantis. It was to, we'll say, Roanoke or wherever.
Sure, which that would be awesome. Okay, no, that's fine. I get that. If that's the reading, then I'm more okay with it. If we, because it seems to me what you're saying is I should look at this book more as Hell's journey to not be just a slacker with no direction.
Yeah, it's more about the journey than the actual pot at the end of the rainbow.
Right, where she finds a purpose. And I get that. I get that. My caveat there still is, with all the build up to Atlantis, I would have at least liked to see Atlantis. Because if we don't revisit this lost city in the second volume, I mean, I guess by then it won't really matter because I'll have forgotten about this. Maybe, unless I'm still super angry. But by then I'll be ready for the next story, right? And I get that. But you know, to go to your point, you're right. The one thing I love about good horror flicks is where you don't see the monster till the end, right? And I guess in your example, Atlantis would be that monster. But the thing is, in those movies, you see the monster in the end, right? The buildup is to give you some excitement to see that monster in the end. And we have a ton of buildup here, but we never see the monster.
We do see the monster. It's that the landscape in the distance.
You don't see it.
Why don't you see it? You see the circles and the rings and the...
Ronnie, that's not the same as actually being there.
Well, I'm sorry we didn't take you on a fantastical voyage in a pod, you know, like in the Aquaman trailer.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Fair enough. I mean, I totally get what you're saying. And even though it seems like I'm totally crapping on this, I really enjoy the story. So I wanted to make that clear before, and I guess I'll reiterate now. You know, I think that, you know, the journey itself is good, right? I think all the characters are really interesting. And, especially when you have such a large cast of characters, in order to make the reader interested, you really have to be a good writer to understand how each of your characters fit together. And, you know, there's what, like six main characters, I guess, right? Cause you have the kids and then you mm-hmm. have the guy from Sagan, right? Like those are mm-hmm. the key characters. The mercenary guys are kind of irrelevant, but you have the, and I guess the dad would be another one.
So, right.
And they're all very well developed and you definitely have that journey. But again, I wanted the initial premise of this to be part of the journey and it wasn't so much.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe I would, kind of direct that towards, you know, I think that this arc as a volume one, an intro before we really get into the what's going on with Atlantis, I think that works, you know. For me, if the intent is to pick it up later, I think it really does a decent job, you know, and that kind of tantalizing the Atlantis payoff, you know, works. But if it's not going to get picked up, and to your point earlier, it's TV series, so why not do that? You know, if not that, if it ever becomes TV, then we'll see where it would have gone. But, you know, I think I also, if it's just going to be this, I would definitely want more about what is Atlantis and what her dad is up to in a world populated by like hostile monsters seemingly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would say to that. So it's a caveat on kind of how to take this.
Yep. All right.
That's cool.
Should we rate this up?
I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5.
Well, how coincidental, because I also gave it a 4 out of 5, a very angry 4 out of 5.
Yeah. I'll go 3.5 out of 5 for reasons already stated.
Cool. Dude, the brother had a Weezer shirt on. That at least gives it a 0.5 point.
Well, you know, maybe they should have sang Africa.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It sure See, we don't know it's a Weezer shirt. They don't have to pay Weezer if they do that. That could be anything that has that font and also those letters.
Okay.
Oh, man. All right. Let's move on over to Clan Killers number 4. This is written by Sean Lewis with art by Antonia Fuso, colors by Stefano Simeone, letters by Dave Sharp, one of the Daves.
And where are we going to go from here?
I don't know, Ronnie. You tell me. I think out of the three of us, you maybe have enjoyed this the least. I'm not saying you haven't enjoyed it, but maybe Whoa. The least.
All right. I thought it was cool that it was a callback to the Celtic god of Balor.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So I thought that was really cool because it kind of gave that vibe anyway. Maybe I'm the least one that likes this one. But it's still solid for me. It's just there's a lot to grasp for me.
Yeah, there is a lot, because I think the relationship between all the characters in terms of plot is very complicated, right? So even though you have the king and the three daughters and you have Cillian and, you know, the harpies and whatever else, there is a lot going on in every issue. And sometimes it can be a little daunting, I think, to tackle it. So like in this issue, for example, you have what's the tribe? The vampire tribe or whatever. Not the vampire tribe, the other tribe that we met.
Sinners.
The sinners, yeah. She basically says, like, I'll disown my tribe if you don't kill me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty big moment, right? You have kind of the harpies in the background. You have the sisters trying to kill their dad to help their youngest sister, who ends up chopping her sister's hand off because she's using magic. And we learned that maybe she's now also being possessed by Balor. I guess to take over her dad's kingdom. And her dad's like, oh, cool. Like, Balor's taking you over. All right. I don't mind that you stabbed me in the stomach 50 times. Like, you get it now. It was worth it. So, like, those kind of moments where you have these changes in the dynamic of the characters are a little difficult to cope with, I think, sometimes, because they happen so quickly and so often. Right? Like, you can't really trust anybody in this book because everybody is out to kill each other.
Yeah. And I thought it was a real cool callback for, like, the kids. Not a callback, I guess, but, kids where, you know, it's a bishop and we know what everybody thinks up when they think of the bishops and clergymen, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so they're, like, an ass for an ass.
Yeah.
And that's like the new chant.
Yeah.
And you have any other sister in the background who's just like smiling.
Although, like, it was kind of weird that the kids are just like frolicking through the woods with the bishop. And I mean, it's obvious they've all been molested by this guy. Like, why are you in the woods with him? You know what I'm saying? Just like, don't go there.
Cause he's the adult and he's making him do it, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. They just looked very happy frolicking through the woods until I met Cillian and the death god thing.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta say that scene felt like kind of a diversion in this issue to me. You know, like, I don't know if that serves the larger story aside from just kind of like a cheap joke, you know?
No, I think it did, actually, because that's when you have the change with Cillian. Because you learn that in the future, he's going to be the king of Ireland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so is your take on that, since you bring it up, that, like, what's her name? Finn is going to die, or that they're going to marry?
No, I think Finn's going to die. Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe.
Do you think she's going to kill herself, or do you think that she will be killed, maybe by Cillian?
Well, I think... No, I don't think Cillian's going to kill her. I think he'll end up being king, but maybe because she... I think she and her dad are basically going to kill each other because neither of them can hold on to the power of Balor. I think that power is too much for just a mortal, and that's why he's gone crazy. That's why Finn is seemingly going crazy. Although the thing is, I can't tell if she fought her sisters and cut her hand off to trick her dad into trusting her so she could stab him. You see what I'm saying? That's why it's so hard to follow sometimes, because the way characters act towards each other changes so much in this book. The only relationship that seems somewhat normal, and I mean, I don't know how normal it is to make like a death pact, like you're going to kill everybody, but it's Finn and Cillian, right? Like, they're obviously friends,
mm-hmm.
but she doesn't have that relationship with her own family, for example.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of confused where we are at the end, you know, what we're seeing, because, yeah, to your point, you know, is Balor, like, straight up controlling Finn right now? You know, like, is she the one that cut the hand off sister? Like, is she controlling her to do that and then to kill her father? You know, and also, like, on the last page, what's up with that, dude? Like, Balor seems to be coming out of her mouth.
By the way, I love that page. It's freaking awesome.
And Magneto shows up.
What?
Did you see? Look at the page before that, where it says, we hunt the things that we hate in ourselves, Cillian. Look, it's the helmet.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That's awesome. I didn't even catch that. That's awesome. Yep.
But that's her dad, though.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I think it's there for a purpose, though. I mean, yeah, it does look like Magneto's helmet, but, I mean, credit at the beginning of the issue, it kind of looked like that, too.
Yeah, I think it's just the way that the light and the shadows are hitting it that makes it look like Magneto's helmet, but yeah.
Yeah, and I think that we're supposed to not like her dad.
Well, yeah. For sure. To go back to that last page, I think that, I don't know, pretty much iterates the whole being taken over by Balor thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, she's not really in full control. That's what she's kind of vomiting Balor out of her mouth. I wouldn't mind owning this page, though. God, I do like that. I do like that. You know, it's got that that Phil Hester vibe. You know what I'm saying? And you know I love me some Phil Hester.
Yep.
Yeah, I like the art in this book, dude.
Yeah,
I think
it's really nice.
A strength. And also, I just, you know, I think the novelty of all the premise and all the mythology and stuff is definitely a big strength.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So we got one more issue. We'll see what happens. But I foresee a lot of people dying in the next issue. Except for Cillian.
Really? What if he dies?
He can't
be
king if
he
dies.
Can't. Yeah, but... He could be a martyr.
He could. Although, you know, it's very possible that the harpies are tricking him, saying that he's going to become king just so that he gets the balls to do what needs to be done in the meantime. That's very possible as well.
Yep. Because the harpies suck.
Yeah. Yeah, and I tried to look it up. There's no King Cillian or Killian. Killian's the other pronunciation of that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Saint Killian. But that's it. No kidding.
Yeah, I didn't really see a Patrick analog. At least as he's, you know, like, not whatever, the vile or whatever
Patrick,
they call him the first issue.
Patrick from SpongeBob?
Yes. So I don't know if it's a stand-in for something or, you know, to that point, I don't know how, like, I looked up, like, the dual hand, and that much is, like, part of mythology. So I'm going to assume that, like, obviously the sirens are known but the sinners and whatever else, I couldn't say.
Sure.
But yeah. And as for the final issue, I'm going to just say that like how it resolves, I guess, depends on whether Finn is actually in control or not, you know? Like if she still has control, I think that she's the one who kills herself because Balor's inside her. And if she's not in control, then I think that Cillian's going to do it, like, to honor her wishes.
Hmm. So what about this? What if this is the way that it goes? So the reason she's acting crazy is that Balor is taking over her body because Balor feels like she's got the strength to lead the kingdom now, a strength that the dad doesn't have anymore. That's why he has to act the way he does, because he doesn't have the respect of his countrymen to run that country, whereas maybe Finn does. And so Balor is no longer inside the king, it's inside Finn. When Finn realizes this, she is going to kill herself in order for Balor not to take over somebody else and the cycle to continue. How about that?
Wow, yeah. It's like Raven-esque.
Raven Simone?
No. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Raven Simone has something evil inside her. I don't know. But
Raven Simone. Oh, man. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. We'll see.
I don't. So getting back to your point, though, Martin, real fast, or Travis, then, because you said the next issue is Balor still inside her, but the last page we see her throwing Balor up, though.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, maybe. I mean, we assume.
Or is it figuratively?
Yeah, exactly. What if it's just to show us that the reason she's acting this way is because Balor's inside her?
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if it's literal, that's like, that's kind of a tiny Balor.
Yeah.
So maybe you could like.
Well, I mean, we have one-eyed giants. We have one-eyed giants and Magneto. So why can't we have like fairy Balor?
And also, is he like, explicit tag, put your headphones on. Is he playing with his balls? Like what's happening there?
Looks like a girl to me.
It's a lady, dude.
Yeah.
It is a lady. Okay.
Maybe she's fiddling her dilly.
It's called modesty, bros.
Oh, they ran out of fig leaves, so.
She's got chicken pox, though, if you couldn't tell.
Bullseye chicken pox.
Bullseye chicken pox. She's got that pepperoni yeah. pox.
Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's the Skittle pox.
Oh, I love that commercial, dude. It's so good.
I don't think it's contagious, though.
That Skittles commercial is so good. All right, let's rate this one up. Ronnie, I'll let you go first.
I'm gonna go 4 out of 5. The book's solid. It's just it takes longer for me to congest than normal.
Yep, I hear you. I'm gonna go the same and go 4 out of 5. And I'm gonna pick up the trade of this because this is gonna read awesome in trade.
Yeah, I'll go 4 out of 5 too. And just like I guess the other thing I'm wondering to your earlier point. Is just whether this is something that's taking over Finn in a sense, maybe something alien, or that maybe it was inside her the whole time. Like I think she mentioned that like she knew subconsciously she was hunting herself. So that I think suggests that maybe it was always inside her. She was always like her dad, and she's just coming to embrace it.
I like it. All right, next week. We have 3 books that we're going to be discussing. We have The Lollipop Kids number 2. We have The Last Space Race number 2. And we have Moth and Whisper number 3. I think those are 3 books we all really enjoy. So it should be a good one.
3 books for 3 co-hosts, right?
That's right.
That's unless somebody falls asleep.
Yeah, unless somebody falls asleep or gets stuck in traffic or has to pick kids up from work or whatever.
Yep. That doesn't happen on this podcast, though.
Never happens. All right, if you want to get in touch with us, Twitter, that's the place. At Rumbar316, at The Great Magnet, at Geekvine, at AftershockPod. We'll catch you next time.